The biggest battle we will ever have to face is the battle between you and you. It's the battle of taking your mind to that limit and then breaking through. On the Mindful Experiment podcast, we will share concepts, universal laws, and interviewing individuals who have done just that, who have gone through the dark times and through those moments allowed their light to shine bright. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Manzo, and I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and taking this journey with me as we discover different avenues to break through those limits, expand your reality, and evolve into the person you desire to be. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. This show is sponsored by Empower Your Reality. Empower Your Reality is an online consciousness school that is designed to help you elevate the mind, raise your consciousness, your vibration, to attract and create the reality of what it is that you desire. At Empower Your Reality, we have books, we have online classes. You can find the podcast here on there and other things that can help you elevate and truly learn the art and the science of creating the reality of what it is that you want to experience in your life. So for more information to check out all that we're up to and what we're doing, please visit www.empoweryourreality.com. Now, back to the show. Hey everyone, this is Dr. Vic, and you're listening to another episode here on The Mindful Experiment as we spend once a week interviewing someone about something that they're doing that helps us level, change the mindset, shift our life, help us raise our consciousness, something along that nature. This week, I had the distinct honor and pleasure of interviewing Jonathan DePotter. Now, Jonathan is part of Behold Retreats, and this conversation we had was absolutely amazing. I think what he's doing and the work he's doing in plant medicine could really transform individuals across in any aspect of your life. And we talk about it. I share a little bit of my ayahuasca experience of what I went through and how it helped me with my spiritual growth. But Jonathan is doing some amazing things. We talk about the essence of ayahuasca, drugs, and why is plant medicine, or, you know, when we look at it from the war on drugs, was it really the war on consciousness? We get into the concepts of ayahuasca and psilocybin and just explaining what that is and how it can help you as an individual just in your life, your spiritual life, and so much more. I had a lot of fun. He shares a ton of great research. He has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this, and he has a ton of retreats that he does around the world that he'll share later into this episode. I highly, highly recommend checking out what he does. This is a topic that's getting a lot more popularity. You hear a lot of celebrities doing ayahuasca and so forth. And there's things that you want to make sure. And what I really appreciate about Jonathan with what he does with Behold Retreats is that he does it right. And in this space, you want to make sure you're going to work or know someone who does it just that way. So without further ado, I'm excited to share this episode with you guys. Here is Jonathan DePotter. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Vic. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to have you on. I love what you're up to. I love what you're doing. I think it's extremely valuable in so many ways. And I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to let you share the value of that with all that you're doing. But, you know, it piques my interest. What's your story of how you got into what you're doing today and how you're serving the world and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so I only found plant medicine about 5 years ago. I had my first ayahuasca retreat in Peru and kind of winding all the way back. I grew up with super hippie parents, grew up in Hawaii, beautiful place to grow up, but it's got a lot of dark energy surrounding it. And so, you know, the narrative that we're fed in school around substances is, of course, just say no. And from what I saw around me in Hawaii, that kind of aligned. You know, I saw a lot of negativity, a lot of darkness with substance use, substance abuse. And so that kind of, you know, kept me away from anything of that sort for the overwhelming majority of my life. I went into the corporate world many years in consulting before actually, you know, kind of reaching that place in my life and reaching that place in my career where I was just like, is this it? You know, I was an atheist at the time. I was working like an absolute dog, you know, up at 6 a.m. and finishing work by midnight most days. And I just thought, I remember looking at myself in the mirror one day and going, is this it? Or is there more to life? And so I took a year off and as part of that, wound my way through Central and South America and attended an ayahuasca retreat with a couple of buddies.
I love that. Can you share a little bit, don't have to go in depth, but like real quick, explain what ayahuasca is and then maybe even share a little bit of your first ayahuasca journey, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So ayahuasca is a powerful entheogenic or psychedelic brew. It's made up of two plants, the ayahuasca vine and the chacruna plant. And it's kind of brewed together over the space of a couple days. And it's got a kind of anchoring in Central and South American indigenous traditions. And, you know, there's quite a few different indigenous and shamanic traditions throughout Central and South America. So the variety of the ayahuasca itself can vary quite significantly, and the traditions can vary quite significantly as well. My own first experience was with ayahuasca was in Peru, just outside of Cusco in the Sacred Valley, which is an area that's very well known for this work. And the experience that I had was incredibly overwhelming. I wasn't adequately prepared. I was not particularly well looked after from a spiritual perspective. From a physical perspective, I was very well looked after. And then I wasn't really guided in terms of the integration of the experience. So walking into that as an atheist, and then, you know, honestly speaking, having my head blown off to a greater or lesser extent, and then being let back out the front door and back out into the world, is not the way that I would necessarily recommend anyone do it. But certainly it was a very informative experience, and it's guided me on a fundamentally different path, which I'm pretty grateful for every day.
Yeah, I would definitely say the head blown off, walls broken down. Yeah, that sounds about right. It has caught a lot of steam and popularity in the last 5 to 10 years. I know when I first did ayahuasca, it was more of just a calling to something of that, because my interest, and I've never had done anything in my life drug wise or plant medicine wise or anything along those lines. And I remember it was just DMT kept calling to me, and I started studying DMT and the neuroscience behind it and how our brains work and how it's in plants and how it's in it. And it was just fascinating. And I was like, okay, how do I get my hands on that or learn how to access that? Right. And then a friend out of nowhere, it was a colleague as a chiropractor. I was just meeting because we had a lot of, we were part of a circle. There was like a lot of connections there, and I never met her. And I was like, you know, let's get together. I want to get to know you a little bit more. You're in another area of the town. I have patients I can refer you to. And so that's basically why we were connecting. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, she looks at me and she goes, you have to do ayahuasca. Something's telling me I have to tell you that. And I'm like, hold up, wait a minute. For 3 months, I've been researching this. And now all of a sudden you're telling me. It's one of the things where, you know, when it comes to the ayahuasca plant, because I have friends be like, hey, have you heard of ayahuasca? Or, you know, I'm thinking about doing it. I think it's really great. Is ayahuasca meant for everyone, or is it, is there like a checklist, or how's that process work, or how's that look?
Yeah. I think that's such an important question to ask, Vic. It's, you know, I think as plant medicine and ayahuasca gains and gains in popularity, more people are experiencing these very deep spiritual experiences without necessarily understanding their own personal motivations. And I think that's such a shame. I think it's super important that we all take the time individually and understand what these experiences represent and develop in a very deep way our own motivations for working with these powerful plant medicines. And I think listening to our intuition is an important component of that. You know, you can draft up the rational reasons to, you know, improve your health and well-being and relationships and sense of purpose and belonging, you know, all of those sorts of benefits that have been proven out by the science from Harvard and Yale and Johns Hopkins, et cetera. But I think ultimately there is something greater than that, which is listening to your intuition and, you know, feeling called, as you described it, Vic, that is as important, if not more important, than any rational reasons that that we might hold.
And I know there's that, you know, in the United States, I forgot what you'll know this better than I will. They still look at it as an illegal substance, right? I forgot what's do you know the level offhand of they say this is not, it's an illegal substance of, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Schedule 1 or Class A.
Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes people hear that, or people have said like, oh, ayahuasca, that's a drug. That's for, you know, people who are druggies and things like that. Can you break that myth down? Why do people think of it that way? And then what is the real, because to me, I believe that things in the universe and life and everything in humanity's, you know, evolutionary process, things become popular out of need, not out of want. And we can dive into that. I would love to pick your brain on that stuff. But is it a drug, or is it truly plant medicine? And how is that different from a drug?
Yeah. And I guess the nuance would probably lie in how we define the word drug, right? Is it a drug in the pharmaceutical sense? I would say no. These are two plants that have been brewed together and have been brewed together for thousands of years. Is it a drug in the sense that it can be applied to a human in order to treat a common disorder or to improve the quality of life of the individual? If that's the definition of a drug, then I would say that the answer is yes. Is it something that should be classified as a quote unquote, you know, illegal drug, illicit substance that damages other people? I would say no. And I think, you know, some of the science that we're seeing proves that out. And actually, the reason that we see this massive explosion in ayahuasca tourism, when tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people traveling to Costa Rica, to Peru, et cetera, is that, you know, people now understand that the science is proven, you know, that there all the science is out there. The research papers are out there for autoimmune disorders, for anxiety, for depression, for overall, you know, sense of purpose, belonging, and well-being, all of those sorts of things. And so the science is there, but fundamentally the policy hasn't caught up yet. And so we've got this massive gap between something that appears to work far better than anything else that we've got, but we're not able to access it freely and legally within, you know, the overwhelming majority of North America.
I love that. And to me, I mean, the term is just perfect, plant medicine, right? It's designed to do something. Because one of the questions I have is I have conversations with some of my friends when we talk about ayahuasca, and, you know, I've only done it on a weekend. It was one time. That was it. That's all I needed at that time. I haven't had an inkling to go back yet. My experience was very profound, still to this day, still picking pieces from it. But then I have some other friends who have done it routinely. Often, every quarter or every 6 months. Is there a difference between one and the other, or is it up to the individual? I know you're talking a little bit about intuition, so I'm kind of just curious.
Yeah. So first and foremost, it puts a smile on my face to hear that you're still picking bits out of your experience so many years later. I think that's so beautiful and so important. I think as it becomes more available and as more people participate more often, what can often happen is that they are not actually putting themselves in a state where they can significantly benefit from a given experience. And it has become a bit, you know, their casual use has become far more commonplace. Now, there's some great research out there that has shown that if there's kind of three categories that they look for in terms of potential benefits from ayahuasca. So the first is joy for life. They ask a series of questions in terms of, you know, joy for life. The second is relationship to the sacred or spirituality. And the third is removing feelings of negativity and or toxicity. Now, what's interesting from the science is that ayahuasca seems to have profound benefits to number one and two. So they improve our joy for life and they improve our spirituality and relationship to the sacred. But interestingly, they do not remove our feelings of negativity and toxicity. And I think that's something that's so generally overlooked, that people are going and having these very profound transcendent experiences, but they're skipping the actual work to be done, which is the mental and emotional work to break through the ego. And so I think that's, you know, that explains, I think, to a large extent, why the overwhelming, you know, number of psychedelic communities are not necessarily a picture that we would uphold as a thriving kind of community, because, you know, they haven't done the mental and emotional work. And I see that that's become really quite common, that people are skipping the mental and emotional work.
I appreciate you bringing that up, because that's something I keep seeing a lot of. And it was one of the things where the shaman that I worked with during that time, I remember afterwards, my third day, I'm sitting there and I'm like trying to figure out my life in a sense, not in the sense of like what I want to do, but just because my walls were just blown down. And, you know, the generator in the brain is gone at that moment. And I'm like, who am I? What is going on? What, this isn't, how am I going to go back into the world? That's my whole, my whole thing was just, how am I going to go back into the world? And I'm talking to him about that. And he's like, don't worry, everything will come back. You'll see, just sit with it. And I'm like, well, I'm the type of person, I sit for a very long time. So that's why I've been still marinating things through that process, because my wife and I will talk about it, because she did it with me. She was my girlfriend at the time. And it was one of the things where we go, she's like, would you go do it again? And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't have that inkling. But I go, I'm a fan of it. I think it's great. But you have to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, I always tell people, you have to be ready for it. Because if you're not, like for me, I walked in not knowing. And I think that was probably better, because I had no expectation. I didn't know what I was getting into. I heard all the stories and I'm like, oh, this is great. I can, I'm going to feel more uplifted. I'm going to work on things. I go, I already have a very big spiritual practice in my life. I'm like, I got this. I can handle this. Yeah. I still to this day, I joke around. I go, I have PTSD from all that, but no, it was great. But it's one of those things, you know, when individuals go through that process, this is why I love it being called plant medicine, because that's what it is. And, you know, you're working through stuff. And can you kind of explain the process of that? What does ayahuasca really do for the individual and how it's not, I mean, you are, I love how you explain how the differentiation between a pharmaceutical drug and a drug per se. But how is it truly plant medicine? If you don't mind, how, as far as you want to elaborate that, what it does for the individual from a, you can go physical, you can go spiritual, you can, however you want to explain it.
Yeah, sure. So I think a helpful place to start might be to describe the typical state of the modern Western brain. So most of us have experienced early life trauma. And an example I sometimes give is, you know, imagine you're carrying some groceries in for mom and mom's had a long day. You're 5 years old at the time and you drop the groceries on the floor. Something breaks. And in that moment, mom yells at you. You never get anything right. Just get out of the way. Now, five-year-old you isn't able to distinguish between that which should take hold in the subconscious and that which is just mom at the end of a bad day. And so that can take hold in the subconscious. And so, you know, if and as the child is playing in school the next day, receives the ball, and then that tape plays back, oh, you never get anything right, just get out of the way. That can actually fundamentally set the child on a different developmental path. And, you know, so even a minor infraction can have quite significant impacts to a child's development. So that's the first dynamic. The second is that we're just overwhelmed by modern life. There's so much going on. There's so much competing for our attention. We've got so many things going on in our personal and professional lives that, honestly speaking, our brains are just overwhelmed. Now, as a response to everything that's going on, the overwhelm, our brains tend to begin to take neurological shortcuts in our thinking. Now, that sounds like a positive adaptive response, but in practice, it's actually doing damage to the software of our brain. Those neurological shortcuts actually are a bit more of a short circuit. And that our brain then becomes overly patterned in its thinking, and a little bit deterministic even, rather than, you know, the full neuroplasticity and range of access to our brain that we are generally looking for. So what these plant medicines do is that they one of the things they do is they downregulate what's described as the default mode network in the brain, which allows a massive reconciliation and information exchange between parts of the brain that normally do not communicate. And so this can lead to, reliving early childhood experiences, traumatic experiences, challenging experiences, could be good experiences, could be bad experiences. And so basically you can see that, you know, if you scan a brain, a modern Western brain, you can see that it's super fragmented in its exchange of information. By contrast, you can see that a brain on plant medicine is highly interconnected. And what's even more interesting to me anyway, is that if you scan a Buddhist monk's brain with 30 years meditation practice, the brain looks analogous to the brain, a Western brain on plant medicine, but nothing like a Western brain without plant medicine, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I've seen what you're talking about. And I've seen that research, and it's just fascinating how it just lights up the brain, like looking at a New York City with all the lights on and so forth. It's unbelievable.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, that's kind of the context for what plant medicine can do. And then, you know, I think a powerful plant medicine like ayahuasca, it's got 463 compounds in it, right? So it's a very complex medicine relative to what we're doing in the West, which is pretty obsessed with compound isolation and looking for that silver bullet molecule. So there's so much happening with ayahuasca, as you know, in terms of detoxifying the body, in terms of reconnecting the mind, body, heart, and spirit, you know, the healing sort of experiences, the healing and the detoxification in the body, and then also, you know, getting us those guidance and those insights for how to improve our quality of life on an everyday basis.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's the thing about, like, you know, psilocybin, ayahuasca, there, you know, even MDA or MDA? No, is it MDA? Anyhow, ecstasy. MDMA, yeah. Right? Yeah, MDMA. There we go. And all these different things are starting to become more into clinical trials and studies. Again, I really believe it's because as humans, we've gotten so vastly disconnected, and we live more in the physical world, and we're supposed to. That's why we're here, for other reasons too. But I also believe that we've gotten so disconnected from who we are that the nature is kind of like, this is an opportunity to help reconnect you back to that place of understanding. Because what are some of the things you've seen? Because I've seen it, I've heard it, I have friends that have gone through it. You know, they've tried a gazillion things to help them from a mental health capacity, and nothing seemed to work. And then they did ayahuasca. I had friends who've done psilocybin, and I have friends who've done MDMA. And all of a sudden, their life has transformed and elevated their mental health. What are some things that are common that you see when it comes to stories or that people who've done it and how they help transform their life?
Yeah. So one of the dynamics that I find particularly interesting and kind of what has ultimately led me into this space is that most people, when they finish an experience, right, once they've come back from a retreat and they're back at home, they feel like they've had a completely transformative experience. But what tends to happen over the weeks and months that follows is that life falls back into its groove, right? So we've had these neurological patterns that have been established over decades and decades. And so, yes, a lot can be achieved in, say, a week-long retreat, but a lot more is actually required in order to sustain those potentially transformative changes. So there's a lot of people out there that I would say that would declare that ayahuasca or psilocybin has changed their life, you know, turned it so much for the better. But then if you actually look at what's going on in their lives, there may or may not be evidence to suggest the same, right? So I always encourage clients that are looking for a really great experience to really ask others in terms about their transformation, right? So where were you before in life in terms of your you know, physical, mental, emotional health. Where were you before in terms of your relationships, your passion for work, your abundance that you were manifesting in your life, all of these sorts of things? And where are you now? And how is it that this experience or these sets of experiences have guided you along this transformation? And how is it that you see the world differently relative to before? If it's the same patterns of negativity and judgment and, you know, low self-worth, et cetera, then yes, you've had a very powerful psychedelic experience, but have you really had a transformative experience? And so that's where I think there's massive potential to improve the quality of conversation and indeed to improve the quality of work in relation to these powerful medicines.
So I have to ask this question because this is what I went through and I know many others have. And I'm curious if you have to. Why does it take you to the dark side first? Why do you have to go? I mean, why is that process there? People always ask because I'll tell them the other side of the story. And then they're like, oh, that sounds like something amazing. And I'm like, hold on. Let me take a step back. Let me walk you through what I went through before I got to that place, because that's what you need to hear. And you need to be ready for that.
Yeah. So what these plant medicines are doing are temporarily elevating our consciousness, right? So there's various maps of consciousness that are out there. I like to use the one by Dr. David Hawkins. I think that's a very powerful one. But it's important to recognize that they are temporarily elevating our consciousness. And so what's happening is that as the medicine is trying to bring us up into, you know, into the light, into the source, into connection with the universe, whatever it is that you would like to describe it as, what needs to happen is that you need to go down to clear all of those things that will allow you to move further towards the light. And that's just everything in this universe is organized in polarity, right? Creative, destruction, light, dark, you know, all of these different polarizing forces that exist in the universe. And so in order for us to move towards the light, all of those things that have previously prohibited us from reaching those states of being need to be brought into the light. And so we need to re-experience them to see them for what they are, so that we can learn from those experiences and avoid putting ourselves in situations and contexts that have those darkness or those darker energies associated with them.
I love how you said it. I love how you brought up Dr. David Hawkins. His work has transformed my life and very powerful work. I recommend the listeners to check out his stuff. Yeah, it's pretty interesting because I know, you know, it's just like life, right? I really believe it's the same essence where you're just using something that's so powerful and opens you up to a whole world of massive just... I'm still picking pieces because, you know, as you know, you go through that experience and there's just so much information that you just can't, from the left brain logical trying to get into memory type of place, it can't handle that. It only handles 5 to 7 bits of pieces of information per second, where the right side of the brain, where ayahuasca is opening up and you tapping more into, that takes millions of bits of information per second. And it's a fascinating, you know, the process, but like life, you have to go through the darkness to get to that light and really, really do that. Now, for some of the listeners, maybe they have heard about this before. Can you just share? Because I've had people bring this up to me and that you see it in movies too, the throwing up part. Now, my wife did not go through that at all. I only had one episode of that in a whole entire weekend. But why does that happen?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different reasons why one might purge. Now, when you're working with real experts in this space, and I should say that there are actually very few that I would say fit that description. I spent, you know, years and weeks on end throwing up in various jungles around the world, all the best 5-star retreat centers. But there's actually very few real experts in this space. And I think that's an area that we really need to work on, is developing our breadth of expertise across this industry. So, there's three reasons for purging. I guess that you could describe them as physical, emotional, or spiritual. And in essence, you know, it could be any of those reasons. It could be energetic. It could be some, you know, very powerful emotional experience, or it could just be the physical detoxifying effects, right? So in the West, we've got, generally speaking, not so healthy diets that are filled with all sorts of chemicals from the food that we're eating. And one of the first things that ayahuasca likes to do is to move those things along. So it's coming out one way or the other, and potentially both.
Yes, totally. I can definitely relate. Yeah, and I remember that I was talking to my shaman about that, and he was like, because again, I appreciate you bringing up too how there's very little, there's a lot of people who are taking advantage of this also in the process. Because you hear the stories and so forth. And I remember, you know, when I was getting, I remember I was talking to my friend when she was recommending ayahuasca, I said, please send me a picture of the shaman and I'll know if I should work with him or not. I am intuitive and I can read people's energy off a picture and I'll know where their intention is and where their heart's at. And I looked and I was like, holy cow, I saw this person in my dream. This is crazy. Like I knew this was like the person I needed to go to. So it was kind of interesting how that lined up.
Sorry. That's so interesting that you mentioned that, because that's a large part of how we work as well. So if you're already familiar with Dr. David Hawkins scale, and you know, this is moving more into the spiritual realities, but for us, we always require, you know, for the clients as well as the practitioners that we work with, we do energetic tests on them to make sure that this is in their best interest and that they're doing the work at the highest quality level, because there's actually very few practitioners in this space who have successfully elevated their consciousness. And understanding that in of itself is a massive surprise, because the reality is that you're not going to be able to elevate the consciousness of others if you haven't successfully done so yourself.
Amen to that. Yeah. And like Dr. David Hawkins talks about in his book, Power Versus Force, he says majority of people stay in a small range in their consciousness, and there's very few that break out of their consciousness. I call it ancestral curse, but it's just the energy of where the individual's at. And so I appreciate you bringing that up and so much more.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's going to shift during these next few decades, because I think a lot more people are going to focus on this topic more directly, which is, I think it represents a massive opportunity for us collectively and individually. And so as more people do elevate their consciousness, then, you know, the motivations shift from desire and envy and pride and all of those sorts of egoic needs about I, me, and my, and more towards the more holistic needs that, that we could all benefit from. And so I think, yeah, it's an exciting time to be alive in that regard.
Now I do have one question. This may get down a conspiracy route. I mean, I'm not saying it will, but why do you think that all the mind or consciousness, I don't know what to put the word, experiences or elevation, things to elevate our consciousness? Because if you look at it, you look at, you know, Schedule One drugs list on here, and you got things like, I mean, there's MDMA, there's peyote, there's, you know, marijuana's on that, but that changed the United States. You got psilocybin and all these, you know, there's some other ones on there too, like heroin. But a lot of the ones that are mind altering in the sense of elevating consciousness are illegal. But there's other things that are, and if you don't want to answer or you don't have an answer, that's fine. I'm just wanted to ask you that. Is it because, you know, they're trying to hold back, not to let us be free in a sense, or just not to let us to expand our consciousness in a certain way? I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a lot more people out there that are now describing the war on drugs as the war on consciousness, right? And that was just a bit of a branding play. And I think you're exactly right. I think a lot of people are questioning whether or not governments have their individual interests in mind. And I'm not going to propose an answer to that, but I think a lot more people are taking back, shall we say, ownership for their own health outcomes, for their own educational outcomes. And I think that's important that people feel inclined to do so, because it's empowering, right? When you are relying upon government for this or that or the other, you're just kind of, you're putting yourself at the behest of the average, right? And I think each of us deserves better than that. And so taking back ownership and responsibility for everything in our life, whether that be diet, exercise, you know, every aspect of our life, what media we consume critically, what energies we allow into our life, what things we're watching late at night, all of those sorts of things have a very significant energetic footprint in our lives. And so people are becoming far more conscious of that and recognizing that, you know, the typical diet, whether that be technological or, you know, or food or, you know, even medicine, is not necessarily yielding thriving results for each of us. So again, I think it's an exciting time to be alive.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's just the way my mind, because when I was first getting into ayahuasca and I had my experience and I was just like, holy cow, there's a lot of people who can use this and benefit from it. And then as I got into the research, I was like, wow, every single thing that I'm researching that talks about expanding the mind and all these different things and help us. I mean, I help in many different levels was illegal and not allowed in the United States. And I'm always like, huh, I wonder why. And then I'm looking at me being a chiropractor. You know, I look at, you know, I could look at, you know, other drugs that are perfectly well accepted. And I'm always like, how is that? It's just like in the United States, you know, alcohol, not that I have anything against alcohol. But if you just look at like alcohol is widely well accepted around the world. But when you look at alcohol and what it does to the body, what it does just from a physical standpoint and neurological standpoint, I'm not even talking spiritually, just those two concepts. I'm like, why is that accepted? But the marijuana was banned. And I'm like, I've done research where when I was in chiropractic school, a couple of us got together and we're like, okay, well, let's look at marijuana and let's see if we could find in mindset wise, if there's a reason why we're banning it and making it illegal. And is there any negative effects to support that from a neurological standpoint? That's how we were looking at it. I was the energy guy, energy medicine guy. We had someone who was specialized in neurology and nutrition. And we're just like, let's all come together and let's just see. And we couldn't find anything. Once, you know, and I was just like, and that's where my mind started to go, wait a minute here. Not saying there's an agenda, because that gets too much into the conspiracy side. I don't like to go down that route, but it's just like, it's just an observation of anything. So I appreciate you answering that question.
I think the US government made a pretty substantial, I think they made a pretty substantial move when, you know, in the 1960s, 1970s, the US had a pretty global expansionist type of agenda. And as all of these hippies were expanding their consciousness and refusing to pick up weapons and go shoot at people they'd never met before, they were like, hey, we don't really like that. And I think that has played quite a significant role in why these were made illegal back in the 1960s and the 1970s.
Totally. I mean, LSD, I mean, right? That was one of the big ones back then.
Yeah, for sure.
So we gave a lot of love to ayahuasca. I just want to, you know, pick your brain on psilocybin. I know that is taking a lot more into the research world right now. I know it's being well more accepted, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's on level 3 on a research side. I don't know if you know this, familiar with this or not, but I don't know what the clinical trials go to. I don't know if it's 3 or 4. I know MDMA is moving to the last one. What is psilocybin and how does that work? And how, if you don't mind sharing too, how is that different from ayahuasca? This is something I know they call it shrooms or magic mushrooms. And this is something I have never done. I won't do because you can have bad trips. And we'll talk about that later. But I'm very like, my wife jokes on me all the time. She's like, yeah, you don't like anything hallucinogenic. I'm like, nope, don't want to. I don't mind that world, but it is not fun for me. So you mind sharing? I apologize.
Yeah, sure. So psilocybin is the active molecule within magic mushrooms, as you described. And within the clinical trials, what we're generally referring to is in fact synthetic psilocybin. So it's the isolated synthesized compound molecule that's being used in those clinical trials. And so that's a large part of why psilocybin has actually been given priority over, say, a more complex medicine like ayahuasca, which has, you know, 463 compounds in it. It's just, there's too much variability in ayahuasca. And so for clinical trials, obviously the scientific method, we like to be able to control for variables and to control for dosage. So psilocybin facilitates that far more effectively. And so we've got, you know, 2 decades of science now from Johns Hopkins. There's any number of new research centers popping up literally every week. I think just in the last couple of months, there was a new psychedelic research center from Mount Sinai. I know there's just been one in Massachusetts. Just this week, there was one announced from UCSF, and one of the best published researchers, Robin Carhart-Harris, is actually moving from Imperial College in London to UCSF in order to open up this new center. So, you know, we're really just at the beginning of the science here. And we really still understand only very little. And what's interesting is that we're now seeing a lot of the scientists and the researchers reach out to spiritual underground practitioners and say, hey, would you be willing to come into the lab and begin to show us a little bit more about what we're actually trying to do here? Because we're coming at this from a little bit of a brute force scientific methodology, and we might be actually able to accelerate, you know, the scientific understanding of the spiritual realm if you guys would come in and do something with us. So I think that's super exciting because there are so many more layers to be understood by the science that that are generally underappreciated at the moment. You know, that today they just basically lump all of the mystical experiences together and say, ah, yes, you've had a mystical experience. But, you know, the relevance and the profoundness and the implication in terms of level of consciousness reached for each of these mystical experiences has very different connotations for an individual. And so as we begin to turn what has been written about in various spiritual books that are sitting on dusty bookshelves here and there and everywhere, and we can turn that into scientific fact, I think that represents a massive opportunity for us to thrive collectively. And so again, very exciting.
I love that. Yeah, we're in exciting times with all this stuff. And I'm curious, too, because my mind goes this route a little bit when it comes to, like, so they're doing studies and it's on the one, it's psilocybin out of the shroom. So there's no studies then that do with, you know, ayahuasca has 400 and I think, what, 60 compounds, you were saying, correct?
Yeah.
Right. And so a little harder to isolate that. With psilocybin, that is the one molecule they're isolating out of the magic mushrooms or the shrooms or the plant. Is there any studies being conducted where they take the whole plant? Because like my world is always, I'm in the holistic world. So it's like, how do we holistically take everything compared to just isolating? Are there any studies on that? Or is it just strictly the psilocybin and that's the only thing they're focusing on?
Necessary compromises are being made in order to fit these new modalities into what I would describe as a broken medical system, right? And so isolation, compound isolation seems to be one of those necessary compromises. My belief, and I think I'm more optimistic than most, is that we will come to understand that there are actually deeper benefits, further benefits from a more holistic approach in actually using the plants as opposed to the synthetic compounds. And there's a lot of discussion and debate around these subjects at the moment, particularly because there's a lot of, psychedelic capital moving into this space that are looking to command and control the whole industry, which is kind of at odds with, the nature of the work. But, you know, that's the reality of the world that we live in. There's people who are always wanting to move fast and to capitalize and make big dollars on any opportunity. And so there's, yeah, some different energies, shall we say, moving very quickly into this space to try to make the most of it.
Yeah, I was curious because it's like, it's the same thing with like marijuana and things like that and the studies I've done. And, you know, at first, you know, years ago, I was like, no THC, all CBD, that's where we need to go. And then I started looking at more research on the combination effects and how THC, when you take the whole plant, there's different variables and how it affects the brain and how it protects the brain, how it can help with so many different factors. And there's all these little compounds that we just don't know yet. I mean, we're just, you know, we're tapping into it and studying it like crazy. But there's the synergistic effect is always going to be, in my opinion, way more important. It's like plants and everything else. Everything exists for a certain reason. I've seen it in supplements. I've seen it in everything. So it was, I didn't know that they were just isolating psilocybin only. So I appreciate you sharing that with me because I think there's a different effect to it when you use it all versus just taking the one. Even though you do get that experience, you can control it. You can, you know, again, like science, right? Reproducible, valid. We can keep making it happen over and over and over again. But then there becomes that point of how much are we taking away from the natural experience and how it was intended, maybe.
Absolutely. And through that medicalization as well, and through that synthesization, what we're seeing is that I think the lowest price point for 1 gram of synthetic psilocybin is something like $5,000.
Wow. Holy cow.
You compare that to... You compare that to a grow kit that you can order online for $40 or whatever, right? And you're going, okay, what exactly is going on here?
Well, it's just like anything else with big, and I shouldn't say big pharma, but just in general, right? How do they try to isolate? And then once they can isolate, they throw a patent on it and now they control price.
Yeah, that's it. And there's so many people that are, I mean, there was one company that got quite a bit of flack recently, ATAI, Atai Life Sciences. They were trying to patent handholding during psychedelic therapy. They were trying to patent soft furniture during psychedelic therapy. They're trying to patent a high quality sound system during psychedelic therapy. And you're just like, what on earth are you talking about?
That is so crazy. That's unreal. It is. Wow. Anything for profit, right? That's kind of the process here. Jonathan, this was awesome. I feel like I could talk to you all day about this stuff. This has been, I love talking about this in the realm, in the right way, I like to say. I don't like saying right because it sounds judgmental, but it's just, you know, sharing it. And I love what you guys do. I mean, I love the whole, you guys muscle test people and all that stuff just to make sure. I think that's awesome. Can you share just really quick something about your retreats and stuff and so forth? Has COVID, well, before I go there, has COVID played a role in some of those retreats, like with everything that has gone on?
Yeah. So just to clarify, so we don't actually do muscle testing. We do dowsing. So it's, you know, similar sort of, we use that same Dr. David Hawkins scale, but we can do so remotely without any physical interaction. But so what we do, which is different than most, is 3 weeks before a retreat with really high quality guided preparation, right? So doing helping people with the mental and emotional work, guided self-inquiry, so that they really can set deep and meaningful intentions and begin to teach them tools that they'll be able to use in ceremony to help them make, you know, big breakthroughs and progress in a short space of time. And then guided integration. So once they're back in the real world, making sure that they have, you know, the necessary guidance to let go of those things that are no longer serving them, and also the tools to begin to manifest their future selves as they return home. So, yeah, I mean, COVID has slowed us down a little bit, no doubt. But a lot more people have been interested in doing private retreats, which has been great. That's something that, you know, if people are in a financial position to do so, I would highly recommend. I personally have had all of my major breakthroughs working privately, as opposed to a group of 20 people that are, you know, variously throwing up in a large room. Not exactly ideal circumstances in my mind for you know, your dark night of the soul, as you correctly pointed at to earlier. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, what we try to do is to provide the right container for people to sustain an elevated consciousness. And that's really what we're looking for through this work. We see all of the other benefits that have been proven out by science are really a byproduct of an elevated state of consciousness. And so, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, the mental and emotional work is really a fundamental component within that.
I love that. And I think, yeah, private would be definitely way more unique, I think, in that way versus with the group. Because when I did it, it was about 20 of us in a room, and it was a lot of energy shifting, throwing up, who's crying. And it was just, I mean, for me, I was able to just stay focused on where I was, because I was in the first day, what do you want to call it? It's just in a deep state of fear, facing my fears, I should say. But it's one of those things. I think that's pretty, very, very cool on that level. How can people connect with you, find you, what you're up to, all the things that you're doing? How can they reach you?
Yeah, you can look us up on Behold Retreats, www.behold-retreats.com. And if you guys are up for a life-changing journey, just come through and put in an application. You'll speak with either myself or one of my team.
But Jonathan, thank you for all you're doing. I'm a big fan of ayahuasca in many ways, psilocybin, you know, even though I am very fearful of ever trying that, but I am a big fan of it in the sense of what it's doing for the consciousness of humanity and helping the individuals and everything that I've been researching on that. So appreciate having you on. Thanks for taking some time to join here on the Mindful Experiment and share your wonderful things that you're doing and letting me pick your brain here a little bit for the listeners.
Thank you so much, Vic. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. For past shows, please visit www.empoweryourreality.com. I hope this show inspired you and added to your life to help you on the journey to rediscover who you really are. To connect with us on Facebook, please visit www.facebook.com/Dr. Vic Manzo. Check us out on Twitter. The handle is Dr. Vic 21. Follow us on Instagram, www.instagram.com/Dr. Vic Manzo. If you were inspired by the podcast, pay it forward by sharing it with someone who you know can benefit from it. Thank you again for listening to the Mindful Experiment podcast, sharing paths to help you rediscover your infinite potential.